will be nice because this, you can use this as your test run. This is similarly, it's similar to what the way it would be if you were presenting in committee, and we'll help you walk through it. You get to do, we'll give you a. All right, we're going to go ahead and get started. This is the Women in the Economy Commission meeting for Wednesday, February 7th, and we are in deep in the throes of legislative session. And having just exited floor time, both House and Senate, we have several bills that are going to be heard today for our consideration. For a recommendation, really, is what it is. We have our first presenter here, Senator Zender, and just so you know kind of what this process is, we're Women in the Economy Commission has been in place since legislation passed in 2015, and our role is to really study the impact of, this can sound crazy, women in the economy today, but really how we can support policies that remove barriers or create equal opportunities for all people to be contributing in our economy. And we know that in many cases women have unique circumstances to need addressing. So we have commissioners representing businesses of different size and some other legislators, in addition to Representative Shavit Houck and myself serving as co-chairs. We have Senator Deidre Henderson, Senator Luis Escamilla, and you can maybe we'll just we'll do a quick introduction, because Senator Zender, for those who don't know, is new as of
January 9th.
Yeah, I was gonna say just not even well, I guess almost a month. He's been with us almost a month, and in the seat formerly held by Senator Shiozawa. So we will have some introductions, then we'll go straight to you for the bill presentation. And following that, we are an informal body here. We will be taking some discussion, and we will take a motion for recommendation on your bill. And our three options are to support, oppose, or support in concept, because we don't want to trap ourselves, because amendments and subs may come along. But support in concept, oppose, or request additional information. So that's sort of where this will play out. And let's start, Shelley, just with brief introduction for Senator Zender, so he knows who he's addressing.
Oh, who's that? I'm Shelley Ellenson.
Let me turn on your mic. I apologize. There you go.
I'm Shelley Ellenson, support staff for the commission.
I'm Ann Burkholder, the CEO of the YWCA Utah.
This is, it's acting weird, and it's only letting us turn on one mic at a time. Okay. Commissioner Burkholder, I guess we heard you. Sorry. Now we're meeting your mic. Thank you.
Okay. Anne Marie Wallace, Executive Director of the Women's Business Center, located at the Salt Lake Chamber.
Kathy Bonas, Department of Workforce Services.
Melissa Freegang, I work for Logistics Specialties Inc. and I'm representing small business.
Let's see, I think. Karen, let's see if that's Commissioner Leonardi.
I am Karen Leonardi. I represent large business and I work for Selectcom.
Judy Barnett, I am the Executive Director of Utah Labor and Community Services, AFL-CIO.
All right. Senator Zender, the time is yours.
Thank you. I've been a family doctor for 26 years, serving an underserved community on the west side of the state, and my life changed on December 22nd when I heard that Senator Shiozawa had taken a new position, and I was encouraged to change my life. I've been delivering babies and performing obstetrics as a family doctor up until not too long ago, and when I heard about the need for a better assessment and treatment for women struggling with postpartum depression, I said, please sign me up, because that's something that's been near and dear to me during my whole career as a family doctor. In delivering babies, every time it occurred, it was a miracle. And it was an incredible privilege to be in the room when a new life came into being. But just when a new infant comes into her life as a mother, when she just expects to be gloriously happy, her exhaustion, her neurochemicals, and even her emotional history can conspire to rob her of her joy. And for an infant, when this child needs mom's fine-tuned attention, her responsiveness, her nurturing, her cuddling, her voice and her playfulness, the depression robs the infant of this chance to connect. Sadly, research shows that an infant who is emotionally neglected can suffer as much long-term damage as a child who is physically or sexually abused. Postpartum depression and anxiety is a serious public health issue in Utah and is the number one complication of childbirth. Postpartum depression includes a range of conditions from pregnancy through the first year after childbirth and goes beyond what we often refer to as the baby blues, both in the scope of symptoms and length of time that moms experience them. Left untreated, postpartum depression impacts not only the mother's health, but also the child's growth and the safety of the entire family. Around the country and in Utah, current estimates tell us that at least 1 in 8 women are affected by this issue. That's approximately 17 women every day. We need to support our families across our state. The concurrent resolution being introduced on postpartum depression awareness and treatment recognizes the prevalence and impact of postpartum depression in Utah and encourages all professionals who work with families, including state and local government, healthcare providers, and nonprofit organizations, to increase training, education, screening, and treatment for mothers and children across our state. So I believe this resolution is the first step, and I hope that next year we'll be actually able to do something and appropriate funding for the assessment and treatment of postpartum depression. And I'm open for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. That was just so beautifully stated. The language there was really beautiful in your presentation. We'll come to the committee for any clarifying questions or comments. Yeah, if you're, that didn't show up on the little red button, so just raise your hand if we missed.
Yeah.
This is a resolution, is that right? Do we have a number on this resolution? I don't see it on that.
I do not believe that it's been released yet. It should be any day. We do have the support of the governor's office, so assuming that the House supports it as well as the Senate, it would be a concurrent resolution.
Okay. Thank you very much. I remember in the 70s, after I gave birth to my youngest, my doctor patted me on the head. I remember so clearly and told me to take a couple of pieces of cheese. Maybe that would brighten my day a bit. So thank you. I can remember moments. Okay. Thank you.
That's funny. Let's get that in the notes. And the health tips begin.
Yes, there we go.
A
little piece of cheese or a little protein.
Commissioner Burke Holder.
I appreciate your comments and the work behind this resolution that has been going on for many months. And I move that the Women in the Economy Commission strongly support in concept this resolution.
Thank you. I'm going to just put a pause on the motion just for a second to see if there's anyone in the audience who would like to comment on the resolution. Okay, seeing none, we'll come back to the motion. Comments to the motion. Okay,
let them off first.
Yeah, let's see. Commissioner Wallace.
I'm not a legislator, and I'm in small business, so, and this may be, I'm the only one in the room, but, and I agree with what you're saying, and I was in last year, had a baby, so I'm grateful for the times that I was asked, you know, questions with my personal care provider about that, which was really great. My question is, and this might just not even be just for you, but in general to educate me on this process, is, I wrote notes, of course, on awareness and treatment, increasing training, education, screening, and as well as other things. A resolution, is there going to be verbiage on what you're expecting of those organizations to do specifically? Again, this is all new to me as far as resolutions, but I see what you want to do, and then I think what's the implementation for this, or what's the requirements of an organization specifically?
Yeah, it's my understanding with the resolution, we want to draw attention to the issue this year, and we want to encourage all those that would be stakeholders and could help implement and increase the awareness of this issue to bring that into the forefront of the discussion in the media, in the state legislatures, in our communities, with healthcare providers, pediatricians, family doctors, OBGYNs. There could be a much better coordinated effort for that assessment and treatment.
Great, so it sounds like awareness and encouragement, although they'll figure out how to make that happen in their own organizations.
Correct, yes. Great. Does that help?
That's what I need to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Friedman.
Hi.
Make sure I have your correct.
I have a similar line of questioning. I'm certainly not a legislator, but I heard you say this is sort of phase one, next year phase two in terms of what the end game is, right? So awareness and all of that integrated into what your comment just was. My question is we are hearing a lot of different bills as well that are either in different phases of their bill structure or passing and all of that. My question is, are there any current bills like FMLA or some other things that we may be seeing today that you see impacting your resolution, even if it's, say, in year two, or anything that we need to be aware of in terms of all of the various things that we're looking at? Sorry.
I might need some help on that because there are so many bills.
And I guess I'm not looking necessarily, you don't have to list out everything that you have, but I'm just wondering if in your work you have found something that maybe is pretty significant.
Yeah, not off the top of my head, but that'll be something that's certainly worth thinking about as we move forward with this.
Yeah, and maybe it's that might help to align.
Yeah, maybe
with some of those potentially.
Yeah, I wonder if Representative Howard Edwards are aware of any current bills on the House that may impact this resolution.
Okay. So, Commissioner, what I see as an opportunity is for both the Senate sponsor and I to work on how to make those alignments where they seem to fit. But I really, quite honestly, see this more as a standalone and really focused on this particular issue. Of course, we can talk about, and I know that we've had conversations with Dr. Cosgrove, who is also here, about how healthy moms obviously benefit our economic community when they're healthy, when they return to work and they're healthy and they're not struggling with postpartum depression or other particularly associated mental health issues that are subsequent to the birth of their children, that they're there and they're present. And I think also, it really does dovetail with a lot of the other, you know, FMLA and paid family leave, but I think what we also try to do is show how it makes the connection, but try not to entangle it, I guess is the best way to put it, because it in and of itself is an awareness issue that we need to bring to the attention of the community, to potential mothers, to family members, to, as mentioned, the medical community. So to not entangle it, but where not entangle it with it, but also help people understand why this would be an issue of concern for the Women Economy Commission. Because we know that when healthy moms come back to work, they're there, they're present, and they do good work for our community. So I think that that's the best way that I would put it. And just also to kind of ancillary answer the question with Commissioner Wallace, with resolutions that are not binding, so it doesn't really, quote unquote, make us do anything as a legislature, but it is more of an awareness raising issue. And then it helps us situate and think about, so what would be the next step? And then that way, as Senator Zender works on this over the summer and prepares whatever the next piece would be an ask, would it be, you know, grant programs? I mean, I don't know where we could go with this, but what's great about resolutions is it increases awareness in the community so much that stakeholders come to us and say, I heard about this resolution. What I'd like to see is X. Have you thought about this? And then that helps feed the discussion moving forward for policy development in the future. So that's kind of what I see happening with a resolution like this.
Thank you.
That's a great answer. Okay, seeing no further questions or comments, we're gonna come back to the motion before us, which is to provide a recommendation of support in concept to the maternal mental health resolution once it's numbered, and we'll make sure that we follow that and make sure that we get that connected up once you're numbered. So all in favor of that motion,
you need a second.
All in favor, please say aye. Any opposed? Okay, we will give you our gold star.
Thank you so much.
And looking forward to running this in house. Very excited about that.
If you need me to come back after the resolution's officially been numbered and released to answer any further questions, I would be happy to do so.
Let you know. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay, Representative Waite, you are next in the room. We're going to go to you for discussion presentation on HB 156. Thank you.
And I have a handout.
So let's hand that to Shelly now.
Yeah, I'm going to do that for you.
The time is yours.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to come back. And thank you for the questions from last time, because I have answers. I wanted to start with some information that I've received recently, and I'm reading some quotes from some research that actually was brought to me by a task force at the University of Utah. This is in regard to FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act. FMLA's stated purpose is to help balance the demands of the workplace with the needs of families and to promote the stability and economic security of families. So as good as that sounds, FMLA has become a confusion in the whole picture of parental leave. FMLA promotes traditional family values, and I'm quoting again from the document that I have, because it implicitly assumes that women are able to take unpaid leave because their incomes are less essential. So it turns out that their incomes, especially if they're low income, are not less essential to the family's makeup. Another thing that keeps popping up in almost every piece that I'm getting now is that the United States and Papua New Guinea are the only two
countries that do not require paid maternity leave. Even Saudi Arabia provides 10 weeks maternity leave. So I wanted to bring those in quoted documents so that I could share those. I had seen references and heard the discussion, but I wanted to let you know at what level I'm seeing that in documents. One other quote, because this includes some information, because of the fact that the United States doesn't require parental leave, Americans, and this is another quote, Americans are missing out on the proven economic and health benefits associated with paid parental leave. So the fact that the United States doesn't have the culture of paid leave, we don't see the benefits that come by naturally providing it. And this became even more apparent when recently the UK, which is the parent country of Rio Tinto, brought their paid parental leave program and policy to Rio Tinto here in the United States. And they had to have a pretty big discussion about it. But when I met with them, they were pretty astonished on both sides to hear what they didn't know about each other's cultures in the different countries. So the UK Rio Tinto people were absolutely astonished to have to think that a mom could be facing delivery and those first few weeks home with a new baby and not have the comfortable expectation that she would just be gone from work for several weeks and returning to her job. So that's the culture and the mindset and the comfort level in the UK and other countries. In the United States, the mindset is always trying to develop a strategy for when mom is going to be going back to work and managing everything from breastfeeding to transporting to the babysitter, even when the baby is very young. And part of this impact came home to me recently. I have a friend with an 8-week-old baby who is still that very tiny, fragile infant. And to think that that baby is already 2 weeks past the time of a 6-week leave period, just, it was astonishing to me to see my friend with that little baby and think that 6 weeks would have already been used in that policy, and to think of the first 6 weeks that mom would have had to navigate that whole picture around taking care of the baby. So these are the benefits that basically we don't tend to recognize because we don't have the culture to see them so easily. The benefits range from increased female labor force participation rates, which can boost the GDP. I'm skipping the citation. Reduced turnover and more productive employees, improving employers' bottom lines, reduced infant mortality, and higher IQ scores. And all of these are cited for the documents. I'm getting to my handout here. The things that I added kind of rearranged from the previous presentation are in the points of discussion and following. The questions that came up at the last presentation had a lot to do with just some specific numbers about the fiscal note. So the fiscal note came in on the same day that I was representing. The fiscal note says, let me find it. The fiscal note is zero. Oh, and I quoted from the fiscal note in here so that you could see what the analysts for the state said about it. So these quotes under the topic of fiscal notes are right from the fiscal note that's with the document. Enactment of this legislation likely will not materially impact state revenue.
So I know I am still learning about all the breakdown of the fiscal note. That line that I just read is the one that everybody starts looking at in terms of the numbers. The next number is the one that shows up on this top line, which is the number that people look to. It could cost the Division of Finance $8,000 one time in the general fund in fiscal year 2019 to update the payroll systems and reports. That's just to update the system by which the state accounts for leave of various kinds. The next part has a significant number in it, but I want to point out in the next lines what that means. To the extent that employees take advantage of the new leave type created by this bill, it could cost state agencies and higher education up to $10,000 on average per event in potential foregone output. Assuming 1,256 employees use the new benefit, potential foregone output could cost $12.6 million. So when we read numbers like could cost and they put a dollar sign in front of them, it looks really alarming. So then when I went over this basically agency by agency, report by report, line by line with the fiscal analyst to find out how the different agencies and departments, divisions were looking at the potential for people to use this. We got everything from 3.8 to 5% estimate of potential application or use of this benefit. And so they had to estimate that because they don't have the actual, we haven't tried it. We don't have the actual evidence. When they applied those percentage rates to the number of people in their particular agency and then plugged in what the average employee makes, they considered that as part of the figure for determining reduced output, foregone output. So then I asked the analyst what foregone output is. He said, it's different from, it is not reduced productivity. Reduced productivity is a different figure and it's a different computation. Foregone output is what they consider when someone is not at work that day or over a period of time and the work gets prioritized, covered by, the more urgent work gets taken by fellow employees, and the work is managed in that way, the same as it is when someone is on an annual leave or a sick leave day. This is just during the parental leave. It's just a different kind of leave, and different agencies and offices already have developed the procedures in which they manage the work. The reason that there's no additional calculation for revenue is that all of these employees are already full-time employees for which their pay has been entirely budgeted. So the term that I'm emphasizing with this is that there is no additional cost because their pay is already budgeted. So there's no additional revenue estimated in the fiscal note. Does that make sense? Okay. I wanted to double check because I think it's kind of an intricate explanation, but for me to understand that the pay is already budgeted and when they're gone and have a sustained pay through the time that they're left means that there's no additional revenue need to be budgeted. So I did put an explanation of the estimates of foregone output as indicated by the percentage and what it means. It also states that the estimates do not include considerations for foregone output when an employee is in the workplace is not present or focused on tasks. And I heard a comment during the previous presentation with Senator Sender that when people, and this can be these days fathers as well as mothers who come back to work and they're distracted from work, there's actually a loss in output because they're not as on task. I asked the fiscal analyst about that because these days those kinds of considerations are starting to be figured into this foregone output when people are at work sick, when they're at work with some other kinds of distraction where they actually don't get the work done, even though they're present physically. This is the same thing as when I'm teaching a class and a student comes to school hungry. They're not focused on work because they're not really there. And we can make jokes about that with kids, but when we're talking about foregone output with an estimate of pay, then that turns into this kind of calculation. We did get the report back. This was a question from last time. Salt Lake City just finished and is still gathering data from their first year cycle of their 6-week parental leave. 94 employees, approximately 3% of their employees, have used the leave. When I talked to the HR director, I could see him shaking his head when he was talking to me on the phone. I mean, I couldn't literally, but
I could hear it on the other side of the
because he said, in reality, this is a really hard cost to calculate because it is that foregone output. They are completing a survey to find out what the apparent costs were when they had to have temp employees come in or cover with paid overtime. So in their police and fire departments, those would be people who are trained to substitute in an overtime basis for officers or fire people who are on who would have to cover. So they're still completing that information. But then right after he said that, the same issue comes up that when people have to come back from too early or not take a leave when they actually need to, they're still not on the job. And when we think of people not being present for their work when they're officers or when they're police officers or fire department people, then it becomes even more critical than even a pay issue. So these are all the levels of conversation that are coming up, and I hope it helps to see the estimate of and the description of the information from the fiscal note as well as the information that we have now from Salt Lake City. The information continued on the back of the page, particularly in the last item, new impact data includes information on the effects on children, with emphasis added about the increased stability of the employer, in this case, a more stable government, when leave is allowed. And those are figures that come out of research that I can provide more information for. Does anybody see any questions at this point?
We'll come to the committee for any questions or comments.
And that concludes my presentation, so I can answer questions.
Thank you. You really have done a thorough job of answering the questions from before, and you have so much data here. I think really presents as best you can, a complete picture of the issue and the impact that it has. So thank you very much. Very, very helpful. Okay, seeing no questions, Representative Shevasauk.
Yes, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Commissioners, I would like to move HB 156 and have us consider a support and concept support for this. I think that Representative Waite has tried to answer some of the questions that we posed to her. She's done a deep dive in terms of seeing what's happened with Salt Lake. And I think, seriously, this is kind of one of those things where in concept, we like the idea. She'll have to carry it forward and make those convincing arguments, which I think she's done a really good job in terms of the deep dive. And I think looking at the cost, the costs are really hard to pin down, but maybe as we move forward, that helps her with her conversations with agencies as well as with my colleagues. So I'd like to make that motion.
Okay. Discussion to the motion. Okay, seeing none.
any members of the public who would like to comment. That is out of, I mean, we're in a skewampus order here. We should have heard from any members of the public before, but seeing none, we're going to come back to the committee then. Discussion to the motion. Seeing none, we will place that for a vote then. All in favor of providing a supporting concept recommendation to House Bill 156, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you very much. And if anyone has any questions or topics that I can address, may I say one more thing? There was a question in the last presentation about a previous unfunded liability. That was a bill in 2006 that affected sick leave and provided a condition for sick leave at the point of retirement to be transitioned into health insurance. And there was actually another stage. That was misunderstood by enough people that three times the normal number of people chose to retire that year, and there was actually a court case against the state of Utah. So that had to do with sick leave, and it had not been properly funded, so now the state knows to be very cautious, because I think I remember that was Senate Bill 213, I think, in 2005. So I wanted to answer that question because Senator Henderson had that, and I thought it was a really good point that I had not had any information about before, but now I can answer that question also, and the state learned a huge lesson from that, so I know about funding.
Thank you. We'll pass that answer on to Senator Henderson.
Oh, good, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Representative Fossen, we are going to hear you. Now, Representative Kwan has three pieces of legislation she's presenting, so she has agreed to let you kind of scoot in front because we just have the one bill we're hearing from you, HB 196. So, thank you for being here today.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, I actually presented this bill earlier in the committee. I don't have any changes to it that are substantial significant. So. I appreciate your support, continued support for the bill. I think it's an important step in the right direction. So.
Okay. You have what kind of feedback? I'm not sure if everyone here was. Give us the.
Yeah, the breastfeeding.
It's the breastfeeding bill.
Yeah. It has a number.
It wasn't numbered at the time, yeah. But it is now.
Yeah.
So.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So you're here because you have a number, and. And we are happy to have you back because I think I'm anticipating running our
commissioners
yeah.
here.
Okay. Yeah, I'm happy to.
You did such a great job.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I could go into all the significant health benefits and et cetera, breastfeeding, but I'll spare you all the statistics and details. Basically, it says a woman can breastfeed wherever she is legally authorized to be. I had thought, actually, at the time that I presented to you, that we may see some pushback from the business community. That has not been the case. The Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce says no problem, and also the Retailers Association has said we don't see any problems with it, which is, I think, it's significant. You know, I have met with some, and there are a lot of different stakeholder groups in breastfeeding, and some have. A very clear plan and agenda, and so I understand that this may be somewhat of a deviation to some plans that may have been laid out. So I have apologized to those groups for not bringing them in earlier. I don't think they have any significant opposition to it now that they understand. They were really looking for a legal course of action if the mother's asked to leave, which is provided in this bill. It's not in the bill language itself, but it's in that section. It's just not in the bill. So
number first.
It's just further down in the statute. It talks about either going through the court process or filing a complaint through the AG's office. So there is legal recourse. Other than that, you know, I think we're trying to keep it as broad as possible and looking forward to moving it forward. I have talked to the Business and Labor Committee and they have told me that it will be on the agenda fairly soon, so.
Good.
That's great.
Okay. Who's your Senate? Do you have a Senate sponsor?
I know Senator Henderson offered. I know Senator Weiler is also interested. Senator Anderegg actually reached out and asked if he could run it.
You got yourself a bidding war.
Yeah, so we'll let him find it out.
That's great. Okay, thank you. Any questions for Representative Fossen? Okay, seeing none. Are there members of the public who would like to comment on the bill? Seeing none, we will come back to the committee for action or any motions. Yes. Commissioner Chavez-Houck.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move that the Women in the Economy Commission offer a support and concept motion or support and concept to HB 196, Representative Austin's bill.
Okay. Discussion to that motion. Seeing none, motion before us is to pass out with a supporting concept recommendation, HB 196. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you very much.
It'll be listed on our, we do a list of supported bills on our website.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
And thank you for participating in the press conference, too.
You're welcome. I actually wasn't a representative, but I wish I could have been. I'm sorry.
It was a great idea.
You're welcome.
That was not intended to be snarky at all. It really wasn't.
No.
I
apologize.
Okay. I felt
like I shouldn't have called you out. I'm so happy to be there. Thank you.
Representative Kwan, thank you for being here. Yeah, and thank you for your patience and letting Representative Fossen scoot in there. So we have, let me turn on that mic for you. Great. So you have three pieces of legislation.
I'm here, and thank you so much for indulging me with these three pieces of legislation. Hopefully, I will be able to explain them in a very quick way. if it's okay, we'll just go in numerical order, and we'll start with 63, which I think is the easiest bill to explain anyway. This is it's a change to allow cosmetologists and other professions to take the exam in languages other than English. So the thing about this bill, and it did pass the House committee and the House floor, and it's on its way to the Senate. So the thing about this bill is that I had a community member come to me, and she owns a cosmetology school, and she said, you know, a lot of my students know Vietnamese, and a lot of my students go to California to take the test. And she said, wouldn't it be great if they didn't have to do that, but Utah doesn't allow this. And I called up Doppel and said, is this true? And they said, yes, that's in fact true. And we'd love to be able to offer the test in other languages since it's federally, it's already translated, it's already scored and administered online, but law didn't allow them to do that. So that's what this bill does. It allows Doppel to administer that test.
Mm-hmm. You know, every now and then you get a bill that you think, really?
Yeah,
very, just seems intuitive. We'll come to the committee for any questions. Commissioner Barnett.
Thank you for bringing this, and I am in total support of this bill. It affects working men and women of Utah, that they shouldn't have to leave to go someplace else in order to continue with the profession. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, any members of the audience who'd like to speak to the bill? Okay, seeing none, we'll come back to the committee for action. Let's see.
Commissioner Wallace.
Okay. I motion that we go ahead and support in concept or even just full on. House Bill 63.
Okay. That motion is in order. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, motion before us then is to support, yes, HB 63 with favorable recommendation of support and concept. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. All right, one down.
Thank you. So the next one is House Bill 209, Mental Health Protection for First Responders. This one just passed out of committee yesterday, and I've been making this joke all day. It's not really a joke, but it's a bill for first responders, and it passed out of committee 9-1-1. So, in any case, this is two things. The first thing is that it defines what a first responder is. And this is law enforcement, corrections officers, EMT, paramedics, firefighters, and dispatch. And then what I'm attempting to do with this is alleviate a barrier that our first responders have when they file a claim for mental health stress or disorder like PTSD. Now, as it is now with workers' comp, they have to prove that causal connection between the job and the disorder. And we know with PTSD how difficult it is to prove the cause because there's so many causes and something can trigger it that doesn't seem like it would trigger it. And there may be a cause outside of the job, and so it's not as clear to prove that cause. And so what my bill does is it narrowly defines that if a first responder is diagnosed with a mental health condition by a licensed physician or mental health care professional, and if this diagnosis comes after the person becomes a first responder, then the causal connection is satisfied. That makes sense. Basically, they don't have to prove it anymore. So it doesn't eliminate the first path of anybody coming forward and without a diagnosis, filing a claim and then proving that causal connection. Anybody can do that now and they still will be able to do that. What this bill does is it includes a new pathway for our first responders, so for only our first responders. Now, just for transparency, I am still working on the bill. It did pass out of committee, but I am still working on the bill because there were some concerns from different groups about the preclusion that there's that causal connection. So this is something that will move forward. I'm hopeful, and I'm more than hopeful. I know it's going to move forward. And I'm working with all of this, but I do ask for your support on this.
Great, thank you. See, let's come to the committee for questions. Commissioner Wallace.
Yes, my question is, how many women are first responders in our state? That's what we're interested in this group.
Yes, you know, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer, and I'm embarrassed to say I don't know the answer. I do know that it's projected that there are more women dispatchers than there are first responders, but I will get you that number. That would be
really helpful. Thank you.
Would dispatchers be included in that category of first responders?
Yes. So dispatchers, they don't have an association, so I've been going with people that I know, dispatcher to dispatcher to dispatcher, from agency to agency to agency, and I've been gathering these horrific stories of what they hear every day, what they have to experience every day, and that's why I think this is so important, because first responders are different. Their job is different from anyone else in that they have to go through the most horrific trauma on a daily basis. So.
Thank you. Let's see. Commissioner Freaking. Here we go.
You got it.
Yeah, I don't have a question. I just have a comment that I think that the social science bears out that secondary trauma is very significant, and obviously people putting themselves in harm's way makes a ton
piece, which is in a parallel path what veterans have done to help ease or eliminate some of the barriers that they had getting access to mental health services. So I just commend the bill, and I think it's something that could easily be missed. So I just want to share my support.
Thank you. Commissioner Bowman.
Thank you. I just had a question on if the Labor Commission has taken a position on this, or if you've been in contact with them at all.
I haven't, and they haven't taken a position on it, but maybe that's a question for Commissioner Garnett to.
So you were fabulous last night, and under all kinds of circumstances, we're following this bill. And the challenge for me personally at this point to go forward would be that there are certain parties, including the police chiefs, I believe, that are not in favor of this bill. And there was the conversation as to how do you know that someone wasn't already hired and had PTSD. So I feel that there's still a little bit of tweaking still that you're going to have to work to get all those folks. That being said, it's a great concept. It's a good bill. We all know women in our lives that have got PTSD. But I just think that it's a little early right now. I don't know, you're on your first reading right now?
It's on
the
third reading in the House.
Okay.
So it passed out of
committee.
Passed out.
It's already passed. Yeah, I listened last night. I knew it passed out of committee. Did you listen to it at all? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just think that there's some things in order to move forward that you might have to get others, and there's other questions about it. But thank you.
Thank you for that. We are working with all groups. That's something that's really important to me, to make sure that there's buy-in from the very people that this will impact. One thing that I noticed with the opposition to this bill is that everyone said this is an important piece. This is something that we want to do. We want to reduce those barriers. So it's the concept, the idea was supported by everyone. It's just how do we go about doing it? And that's the thing, is I think there's some tweaks in here. I do agree there are tweaks, but to support this in concept, I'd love to have that support.
I think that Commissioner Bonas was actually asking about the Labor Commission.
Oh,
so specifically the Utah Labor Commission, not the
I'm
Labor
sorry.
Caucus. So
that's where my bias went automatically to the Labor Caucus. My apologies. And no, I haven't brought it to them. Thank you.
Yeah, I just texted Commissioner Amon just to see what his opinion is on it, since they handle all the workers' compensation claims. So I guess what I want to know from you further is, the way the code is written now, these employees would be able to avail themselves of worker comp just like any other employee. And so is your position that they need an easier avenue of proving that they need workers' comp because of the nature of their jobs? Is that why you want a little bit of an easier path for them to prove causation as far as their mental health is concerned and that it attaches to their employment? Is that just because of the nature of their jobs, it should require less of them to prove that their ailment was caused by employment?
Right. So yes and, or a yes but, maybe. In the code, there's right now, I can even tell you what line it is on, 83 and 84, legal causation requires proof of extraordinary mental stress from a sudden stimulus arising predominantly and directly from employment. And that, I think, is the barrier. And that is maybe where my bill is going to focus on. So that was brought up in committee yesterday, and it was one of those light bulbs above your head that says, oh, maybe that's where it does need to go. But it is meant to alleviate that section.
Okay.
So,
yep.
Thank you. Commissioner Leonardi?
I obviously didn't hear the reading, but I just had a question about commercial insurance, because yes, there's employment and there's workers' compensation issues, but just can you tell me a little bit? There are first responders that aren't necessarily employed, they're volunteers, like in rural communities and things like that. And can you tell me a little bit about kind of what response you've gotten?
The response that I've gotten with volunteers is that they would like to be included, but this bill doesn't include them. It only includes people who are employed. And it's not because I wanted to exclude them, but because it's a different issue. And this is the beginning of a conversation that has been going on for a long time. And so it's an attempt to alleviate a barrier out of many, for many people.
You've done a lot of great work on it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions, any members of the public who would like to comment on the bill? Seeing none, we'll come back to the committee for action. Representative Chavez-Hoff, would be honorable.
So, commissioners, I too would on this bill like to go ahead and move it forward with the recommendation of supporting concept HB 209.
Okay, would you like to speak to that?
I think there are still some questions, but I think the underlying premise of it, folks. You know, I'll let the commissioners decide for themselves, but I know I'm comfortable with where it's at, and it looks like you're vetting it through the process. You're listening to the various stakeholders as it wends its way through. Inevitably, you're still going to have additional conversations, but what I like about it is that you have identified a very specific and unique circumstance that warrants that light and attention, and especially when we're thinking about the women, first responders and the dispatchers, as you've noted, where you've got a particular work sector that is predominated by women, which we often, as a commission, we like to kind of really zero in on those types of professions where people may not pay as much attention to those. I think that it would suit us well to support it so that you can identify, you know, in particular, you've got this sector of employees that are often traumatized, and we're not dealing with them in a way we might be able to. So anyway, that's my motion.
Thank you. Discussion to the motion. Commissioner, hold on, it's coming. Commissioner Waller.
I also agree that I think there's a need for this. I would prefer that we have the data on the women that are involved because of our Women in the Economy Commission stance. Although I don't think it'd be a problem to support it in concept, but I would like to know those numbers, because then I would feel good about us with that commission, or not commission, with the support for it moving forward.
So is that?
Me personally, I would vote for additional information, but if it's already gone through the House, not the Senate, would that just be prolonging the time that we need to support it?
I think we can. Commissioner Chavez has said, and knowing, because I sat on this committee last night, the Law Enforcement Criminal Justice Committee, when this was heard, and it was an interesting discussion, because the police chiefs did have concerns, but there were several law enforcement folks there speaking to the bill. So you don't get a vote of 911. That is clever. That is clever. You're right. Without having people wanting to feel comfortable with it, and some pretty substantial confidence that the bill sponsor is going to get to that point. Because we are really cautioned from sending bills out to do their work outside the committee. And I think there was a consensus that the sponsor would do that, and consensus with the folks from the community that were there. So I think within that context of what the assumption of the committee is, and knowing that the motion before us is layered on top of that assumption, I think that kind of loops in what your concerns are as well, but feel free to. Do you want a substitute motion? That was my question. Do you want a substitute motion?
Like a second option? Is that what that means?
Well, to substitute it with a motion to actually do what you were saying,
take it down to the other level of you would want more additional information before the commission would support it. So, and it's
Are there others that have the same concern? If it's just me, then let's move forward with the first motion. Mm-hmm. But if there's anyone who feels the same way about at least having some data, I don't mean to push something that I think is a good thing. I just think that we should know at least one
of the data. What you can do is make that substitute motion. We'll take a vote on it. That'll give you a feel of where everybody else is at. And then we return to the underlying motion. If your motion fails, it returns to my underlying motion, which is the support, and then we'll take that vote. So you could do that if you want. If that feels like something you really, if you feel strongly about wanting to have that more information,
please. But I don't know if anybody else does. So I'm okay if nobody
so make sure. You'll know.
I motion to request additional information on this.
Okay. And what would happen here is we will probably not be meeting again during the legislative session, but if you recall, we did create an opportunity for us to do electronic meetings. So we would, if your motion passes, this is not the end of our eyes on this bill.
Right.
We can, through an electronic means, still meet, so to speak, and conduct a vote at that point.
And what
so I just want to clarify.
Right. And what could happen is Representative Kwan could send us information saying, you know, I've talked to the Labor Commission, I've, you know, addressed some of the concerns that came up in the commission meeting, and if you feel that those have been addressed, then one of us could make that electronic motion to say, okay, given the fact that these issues have been addressed, we'll send out for another motion to support in concept at that point. So, but let's see where the vote goes.
Right. So we have a substitute motion before us that is, we'll come to comments, which is to give a recommendation of requesting additional information. It looks like we have a couple of, I might have to turn off your light. Don't be offended. Okay. Commissioner Freeging. Discussion to the substitute motion.
Yes, so I guess where I'm at is I do feel it's important to have the women's connection and the numbers, but I don't know, I mean, so what does that mean if there's 5,000 first responders and 20% of them are female or 10% of them are female, is that gonna change our vote of agreeing in concept? And I guess when I'm voting on the motion, I support though having the women's numbers in it, because that's what our commission is all about. So not to do a spoiler alert, I'm gonna vote your motion down, but only because I think I'd like to eventually do another motion maybe that mediates the two.
That's very appropriate. You can have two motions layered on top of each other. So after we take the vote on her motion, it would be, if it passes, then our business here on this bill is done. If it does not pass, then another motion, you could make a substitute motion on top of the underlying motion, which is Commissioner Chavez House, which is to support in concept. Now we will come to Commissioner Barnett.
Well, what I was going to just say is I'm going to support in concept, but I do want to have those figures so that when I post it on our website, and our webmaster has told me that it's nice to say why we supported it, because this percentage of women are and that's easy, because really the concept, whether she has every one of the players on her side or not, the bottom line is it's going to keep our women first responders to health care or to, you know, workers' comp. So I don't, that's not really a motion. I don't know what that was.
This is the legislative process. Commissioner, exactly. It's a great process.
Okay.
Any other further discussion to the substitute motion? Come back.
I do.
Seeing none, we'll go back to make her the motion.
If I motion, do I still have to vote for my own motion?
You can withdraw. Your option.
I would like to withdraw because I think the options of supporting a concept with that data is exactly what I'm looking for. So.
Okay. Right. You can
just
withdraw your motion.
Perfect.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Motion is withdrawn. We're back to the underlying motion then, which is to support in concept with recommendation there from Commissioner Chavez-Hack.
Okay.
Commissioner Fregan.
Just policy, do I make an amended motion or can can I make a recommendation to the motion when we vote on
the discussing, we are in discussion to the original motion, the underlying motion.
So the underlying motion, I would just add to that it would be great to have the relevant information. So certainly the gender-specific breakdown, but also to Representative's point of, you know, it may not be, it may only be 1%, but if there is a targeted industry where the women predominate, that type of relevant data would be important as well.
So that's feedback for the bill sponsor, and I can see her furiously taking notes. And I anticipate that that, let's go to the bill sponsor for your comments to the discussion that we've just had on this bill.
Thank you, I appreciate the conversation. I did just look up quickly some stats, and the thing is about this field is it is primarily male dominated, but probably not for dispatch. But, and that's not to say it makes it a male field. And that's, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page with wanting to recruit more women into the field. For firefighters, just again, it was a quick look on Google, it was 7%, and that's ridiculously low. And so I think it makes a strong statement when the Women's Commission, Women in the Economy Commission takes a stand on it, because it says, you know what, we may only be 7% now, but this is very important and we want to have more women in the field. So I appreciate it. And I will be looking for this data.
Great. The more data we have on that, the better.
I'll follow up.
Help with that message.
I'll follow up.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no, seen another comment, Commissioner Bonas.
Thanks. So I'm probably going to vote no, and not because I don't think it's a good idea to protect these people, because I'm an attorney, and as I'm reading this bill, what you've done is taken away the responsibility of these workers to show that it was their employment that caused that mental health issue. So all they have to prove in court for their employer to be on the hook for costs is that they are a first responder as you've defined it, and then two, that they were diagnosed after they became employed with that employer. And I just don't know if that's enough to just, you know, that there's no other recourse for the employer at that point, that they're on the hook. And it doesn't even have to relate to their employment or how they cared for that employee or not, and the employer could do all they could to ensure that that individual was cared for, but they would still be on the hook if they just met those two legal elements. That gives me concern as an attorney. If I'm representing the employee, I'm good as an attorney. If I'm representing the employer, I'm gonna have a really hard time getting them off the hook, even though they may have done everything they could in their control to provide a safe environment for their employee. So may I make a suggestion? As you are redrafting, put a rebuttable presumption in there, right? So say that the courts will presume causation if these two elements are met, but that you give the employer the opportunity to produce evidence at that point that no, it wasn't caused by our employment and we did do all these wonderful things. At least gives them a shot in court to prove that they weren't the cause, if they really weren't, right? And that's my suggestion, and since it's not currently in the language, and I don't know if you're gonna go that route, I'm probably gonna have to vote no on supporting it.
Thank you. Commissioner,
I just think there's a couple of issues to that point, and that's that yes,
it's been recorded.
It's just hard for her to get to
it. Yeah, reach.
To help with my mother's chair.
Yeah. So I guess what I was just going to say is it is actually difficult right now to prove PTSD. So, and I think that the other concept is that inherent, I mean, awesome that we try to do things like mental health training in advance, right? Resiliency training in advance, right? Those are skill sets that we can enable all of our first responders to, but I still liken it to a veteran or a military personnel, right? If we do want to recruit more people into these industries, we have to recognize that there are inherent risks to the job, just like putting your life on the line, but there's also mental health risks as well. And we know that the data bears that out, even if the courts don't right now. So I guess in terms of, do we accept in policy, and then maybe to your point, write that in from a legal standpoint. But I think that those are two things that we can't extricate from the conversation in terms of policy.
Certainly.
Go ahead. Thank you. So I appreciate the comments, and actually there are two paths right now, and maybe more will come up as I continue to explore this with the constituent groups. But two paths, that rebuttable clause there, that's one path. But another path is to take that completely out and to look at the definitions of legal and medical causation. Because right now they're intertwined in the law, and it's circular. There's a circular argument. There's a legal cause if there's medical cause, which means that there's a legal cause. And so what does that mean? And to add in new language into the statute that discusses the difficulties of making that cause. So I think those two paths are where I'm moving to now, and I'm leaning towards changing those definitions. I shouldn't say changing, clarifying those definitions. So I appreciate that. I believe the motion on the floor is to support in concept, so I would encourage you to look beyond the words, because I really am trying to fix it and I do recognize there's some issues within the language that's there now. But if you do support the concept, I would encourage your vote and would thank you for your vote.
Okay. Seeing no further comments, that we will come to the commission for a vote on the underlying motion, which is that we would support in concept HB 209. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That does receive unanimous support in concept with hefty to-do homework list. We appreciate and advance your work on that. Okay, bring us home with 263, House Bill 263.
Thank you so much for your support for everything so far. 263 came to me from a constituent who had his mother in an assisted living facility in my district. And he said, this was about a year ago, and he said that my mother's rent was raised 3 times last year. And we're okay now. She's okay where she's at. But what happens if she gets priced out? And I didn't know the answer. And I said, okay, well, that's a really good question. So let me ask the answer. I thought it might be an easy answer. Nothing is ever easy. That's worth doing, right? So I shouldn't say that. There are some things there. But anyways, in this case, it wasn't. And the question, the answer became more and more complex. And I realized that I'm going through trying to find the answer. And I don't have the added stress of having a mother or father or family member who we need to find a place for where they're going, and there may be some health issues, and there may be some other issues that are going on. And so it became to the point where I realized the more I asked, the more I didn't get an answer, because the answer was, we don't know. And what I had found as I was going through the talking to people is that more and more of our seniors, or I should say it this way, more and more of our homeless population are seniors. They're aging, and it does talk about our changing demographics, but it also talks about a hidden population, because these are not workers. These are not people who are going to go into the workforce. So what is happening with them? Where are they going? How are we helping them? And again, the answer is, we don't know. Well, how many are there? We don't know. What happens when somebody gets discharged and they have nowhere else to go? So I've been hearing stories, anecdotal evidence about people being dropped off and people being taken to hospitals because they don't know where to take them, or homeless shelters, but there's no data. So this bill attempts to gather that data. I've been working with the Assisted Living Facility Association. I've been working with the Department of Health and the State Ombudsman to develop some language that talks about gathering or requiring assisted living facility to report the information when they initiate a discharge. So they will tell who, and they will report it to the state ombudsman. So who is being discharged, why they're being discharged, when they're being discharged, and where they go if they know that information. They don't always know that information. They will also be required to tell the person that they're discharging, the resident, that there is an ombudsman program. Here's the ombudsman's name, here's the address, here's the contact information. On the other side, the ombudsman, I have language in the bill that says that the ombudsman will gather the information and report the data to the state yearly, and then also will offer an exit interview. And the reason that I added an exit interview, so I'm sorry, that I should have started with, there's a substitute that I should have emailed to you, because the substitute looks different from what's online. So in the substitute, I added an exit interview that is voluntary to the resident that this state ombudsman would offer. And that's because if our residents are being discharged, they may not be forthright with their information to the assisted facility centers, especially if they feel they've been discriminated against or if they had problems with the facility. So
thank you. That concludes your presentation. Okay, great. Let's come to the commission for any questions. Commissioner Pregame.
Hi. I have very similar questions to the last conversation, and that is, do you have at least some data around why you've chosen to bring it to the Women in the Economy Commission? Is it because women live longer, so there's a higher population, or caregiving falls more to, say, the female working woman? So if you could just speak to the connection point, that'd be awesome.
Yes, and that is exactly. We do know that women live longer. We also know that women live single longer after being widowed, that a man on average will live, I believe it's 3 to 7 years, but a woman will live decades. A woman is more often the caretaker for her parents. And her family members. She's also often the kin keeper, which means that she's the one that brings the family together for family meetings. She's the one that brings them together for holidays. She's the one that calls. So when we talk about assisted living facilities, specifically assisted living facilities, we are often not only talking about the residents primarily being women, and I don't have data, so I'm going off of the research that I know that surround them, but so being a resident, but also being the caretaker more often.
And then do you have data, or at least alignment in terms of how it impacts the economy? So if it's a disproportionate amount of women that are impacted by this issue, is there an economic concern around, or that you could speak to?
No, I appreciate that question. And again, I feel woefully unprepared. I should have done this before, and I didn't do my homework well enough. But what I don't have the data, but I do know that women are more likely to take off work when they are dealing with issues regarding the people that they care for. Nowadays, we are seeing that our families, our parents, I shouldn't say our parents, women in middle adulthood are in this what's called the sandwich generation. I'm sure you all know what that is. They're taking care of children and taking care of parents. And because we as society, as humans are living longer, we're seeing that extended. So children are actually, in this new generation, which is called Gen Z, right? So this new generation, Gen X, which are millennials, and Gen Z, are staying in homes longer. They're delaying marriage, they're delaying college, and they're delaying full-time work. And then sometimes that doesn't have to do with them, right? Because we know that affordable housing is difficult to find, and we also know that higher ed is expensive. And so families are taking care of children longer, and they're taking care of parents longer. And again, that often is on the women. And so we do see the impact to their jobs.
Thank you. A couple of other comments. Commissioner Barnett.
So I'll be opposing this, not because I don't think it's a great bill. I've just gone through this with my uncle. I have a caregiver, and I know that process, and not because it's not going to happen to me someday, but simply because the women in the commission are, you know, we're trying to focus on some economy kind of things. And also, when I post this on the website, I need to get a little snippet of why this affects the women in the economy. And I know that you could probably give me some great points and I can read through it, but at this point, we'd love to embrace every bill that's coming to us. I think we have to stay focused, and you know, I'm always willing to listen to the commissioners, of course, and I may change my mind because that's the American way, but at this point, I'll be opposing this.
Thank you. Commissioner Wallace.
I just had a really quick question about the correlation between caretakers and I think the main topic of homelessness in the population that's coming out of assisted living centers. I'm wondering if they have caretakers, would they be homeless? Do you know what I mean? And so the correlation between the stats that you do have, correlating it back to the actual bill itself.
Yes, it's a great question. Thank you for that. We know that $1 million a day is lost to our seniors due to fraud. So, and I'm only going to speak about fraud, but we can also talk about abuse and neglect. But many of the, this is due to family members. And so that's something that we need to be very careful of when we talk about caretakers, that sometimes the caretaker is the perpetrator. And it's a terrible thing to think about. But yes, there are times when we don't know where a family member will go to. And I've heard stories, and again, this is that anecdotal evidence because we don't have any data. I've heard stories of family members taking their family members and putting them in homeless shelters but keeping the money. It's terrible. It's terrible. And so I think as a state, it's our responsibility to make sure find out what's happening. If we're hearing these stories, is it happening? Well, and if we don't know, it's our responsibility to find out.
Ready for motion? Okay, let me just see if there's anyone in the audience who would like to comment. Okay, seeing none, let's come back to the committee for action or a motion.
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion to request additional information. I agree. I don't think we have enough to go on. I don't think you've presented a concept specific enough to women in the economy for us to make a vote in that direction. But I also don't think that there's enough opposition in my mind, right, to say, no, we don't like the concept. I think there's enough ambiguity out there to say there may be some really relevant data that we could look at even next year or the next time if you needed us to sort of support. But I would say for this session, if there's no further needs from you, I would make the motion to request additional information.
Okay. Discussion to that motion. Commissioner Barnett.
So I have the bill here that I've been reading through, and I agree with Commissioner Friedkin that we should get additional information, and maybe, like you said, next year. I don't know, maybe it'll pass this year, but that's the challenge of not having the bill so that you can read through it, but I've just been reading through it. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Any other discussion to the motion? Which is to request additional information. And realizing that if that additional information came, we could also disseminate that electronically and take another action at that point. Okay. We'll come back to Bill's sponsor for comment on that, this summation.
Yep. I just appreciate all of the comments. I thank you for your patience and for listening to all of my bills. And I would love to come back next year with a new bill after having passed this bill, because this is another issue that I think we'll be working on for many years. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a really quick comment. Yes. So, and I just wanted the sponsor to know, you came in, you said, oh, I feel so ill-prepared. This is part of what the purpose of the commission is and why we don't just say support or oppose, but we talk about supporting in concept, because we want to be a resource to legislators. We don't want to be this, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down, and we don't want it to feel that way. We want you to come to us and feel comfortable to come to us with your proposals so that we can strengthen your policy arguments. To whether it makes it a fit for us, maybe it'll never be a fit for us, but hopefully maybe in the conversation it helps you going forward as you move your legislation forward. So please don't ever feel badly about, I mean, that's part of what this is about, is giving you input and being a resource for you as a legislator. So
thank you.
Certainly. Okay, well, let's come to the committee for a vote on the motion to request additional information, and this is on HB 263. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So that motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Representative. We are happy to welcome our newest, well, I think you are
second newest.
House colleague here, Representative Cheryl Acton. And we are at almost 10 to 2. We still,
sorry.
No, you're
fine. You're actually timing was fine. Yeah. Otherwise, you would have been sitting here for the last hour.
No, you so. Guys have arrived at just the perfect time. And just want to point out that we have floor time at 2. So we have your bill, a brief introduction to Senator Escamilla's bill from her intern who is here, which we will not take action on.
We'll leave it to the will of the commission as to how we want to handle that situation, but we do want to give her an opportunity to kind of bring us up to speed on those.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I made the mistake of not informing my intern about this meeting, so I thought it was tomorrow. But anyway, thank you for letting me speak. I was just researching what women in the economy is involved with, so I hope that my bill will fit into your parameters, but it is a bill so far not numbered, not named officially. Initially, we named it Affirmative Action Child Support, and it is a child support bill inspired by a constituent of mine who, at the time of her divorce, her husband was severely underemployed in a nighttime security job, and within a month of the divorce, his income increased over 200%. We're really not quite sure how much. But she was not able to, you know, have that reevaluated. It wouldn't be reassessed for free for 3 years. And by that time, anyway, so she had to scrape together $300, go to the court, have him served with a constable, and then wait 6 months to have this resolved so that she would start getting more child support. And meanwhile, it was very, very difficult. So that made me think we need to have something where there's an automatic evaluation, or we need to have an affirmative duty law where the non-custodial spouse has an affirmative duty to report significant gains in income so that it can be recalculated. Because as a child of divorce myself, I know that financial insecurity that the child feels, even though, you know, he should not or she should not. Because the parents do have an affirmative duty to make sure that the child's lifestyle keeps up with their own. I mean, that's how it is in a normal intact family. And so, you know, rather than waiting for the discretion of the non-custodial parent to buy the Nikes or pay for some of him at their discretion, if that money were available to the child. So that's kind of the spirit of the legislation. And the attorney who's working with me, Tara Harrison, in the Legislative Research Office, she suggested that we be bold, so I appreciated that as a new legislator, and that we go for the, it will be reevaluated. What we're asking for in the legislation is that it will be reevaluated automatically at 3 years. This will prevent the non-custodial or the custodial parent from having to be a private detective and a debt collector at the same time that they're putting the child to bed and doing homework. And so it makes it a really difficult lifestyle when you're doing all of that on a shoestring. So that's what we're going to ask for in the legislation. So, and I feel fairly good about it because I think everyone understands the need for financial security for the child. And really, child support is between the parent and the child. I really don't want any intersection between the two divorced spouses because that just creates emotion which disturbs the peace. And oftentimes people divorce over monetary issues anyway. So that is my bill in a nutshell. And again, it's not numbered or named.
The bill shall not be numbered. I hope that's not okay.
I just got a text from her that she is drafting or that she has a draft.
Great. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for your presentation. You. Let's come to committee for questions.
Okay.
Commissioner Burkholder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a clarifying question. Am I understanding you correctly that when there is a divorce proceeding and child support is a part of that, mm-hmm. that there is no evaluation of financial ability to provide child support once the initial determination is made unless the custodial parent pursues that herself or himself?
Either parent can pursue it. And that is correct. You have to initiate that. And you can only initiate that every 3 years. And the other party will know that you initiated it because it's only done by initiation. So if the custodial spouse doesn't want to ruffle the feathers, doesn't want to get him angry, doesn't want to go back to court, doesn't want all these things, she'll just get by with the amount that she's currently making. But over the course of a child's lifetime, usually family income increases. And the child doesn't always benefit from that.
That seems to me one of the critical points because it can go in the other direction, can't it?
It can.
The reevaluation could actually result in a reduction of child support as well. So I don't know what what the data are about the likelihood of income increasing as opposed to decreasing.
Generally, now you're right, we should probably research that data to support the bill, but generally people do earn more over 3 years' time than they were 3 years ago. But there are certainly exceptions. But that was one of the interesting things in talking to ORF. I asked, has anyone ever come to you and said, I'd like to have it recalculated, I'm making a lot more money? They said twice in 30 years. Whereas, does anyone contact you when they've had a significant loss in income immediately? One of their first calls is to ORF to report that I've lost my job or I'm on disability. And that makes sense too. But they don't voluntarily report that, I think because they think I'll have more money to do the fun things and to buy the tennis shoes or, you know, I'll get to be the hero. but it's always at their discretion.
Let's see. Commissioner Freegan.
So you haven't turned me off, which right. Normally you guys are like, I have a clarifying question as well. So if what I'm hearing you say is that we could use technology potentially to have that happen in a very neutral setting, mm-hmm. which you know might enact automatically, I guess my question is have you had conversations, say, with a Department of Workforce Services that has the unemployment data to sort of somehow de-identify, and I mean, it sounds like there may be some lots of barriers that even mm-hmm. though it seems like a good idea to use technology in a very efficient way, there could be massive barriers to actually implementation. So, mm-hmm. and I don't know if that matters for us today, but I'm just curious if you've done that side of the work.
I know that at ORS they do have basically private detectives, you know, I don't know what they call them, but who try to research how much. you know, everyone does file taxes, but if both parties are within the state of Utah, it should be fairly straightforward. But sometimes the other party is out of state or even out of the country. That's a much more difficult proposition, but I think it's better than nothing.
And then I just have one other comment, and that is, true to your point, I think that there are lots of custodial dads as well, that, so I think it certainly, I know it's weighted typically one or the other, but I think it's becoming more and more surprisingly gender neutral in terms of who that
affects. That's true.
But I will say that the indirect of the tipping point for females, because we know that wages are lower, so if they, you know, income coming into the family can be considered child support. And when we talk about wages at the $12 an hour, we had a long conversation last year around sort of this tipping point, that money coming in, not just for the child, but just for the stability of that home environment, I think is pretty critical in the context that women make less, right, in general. So that's a really broad overgeneralization, but I think one that's important. Conversations.
And that's why I am trying to be careful. Actually, in this meeting, I let my guard down, but I do try to be careful to say custodial or non-custodial or paying and receiving.
Because it's a safe space for weekends.
Yes.
Don't worry
about that.
Yeah. I didn't mean to make any case like that. I was trying to draw the picture.
But generally speaking, that's true.
Yeah.
And that is how it usually is.
Okay. We have a couple more comments. Commissioner Bonas.
Thank you. You said that there would be a mandatory reporting of income at certain increments.
Or dates. Is that what you said?
No.
An affirmative duty
Explain
to me the mechanisms of that. Like,
yeah,
is that affirmative duty just defined? When does that hit? And then who are they reporting the information to? How much time do they have to report? Like, then who's going to do the analysis on how much child support changes? Can you give me an idea?
Okay, there is a table that directs the court how much child support.
Right.
So the affirmative duty, that language I had never heard before speaking with attorneys about this, but that is, you can make it someone's affirmative duty, basically a voluntary duty. And just acknowledging that the parent has a duty to the child. Child support is about support of the children. And I think a lot of times the non-custodial parent thinks I have to give money to my ex, you know, and that's really not fun. But when you're thinking of it as I'm supporting my children, that's different. So, and now I've forgotten the rest of your question. But, as far as who to report to?
Yeah, the mechanisms of it. Because the way I understand affirmative duty from a legal standpoint is that is a requirement of that person. When there's a change, they are now legally required to report that information.
So I guess we're letting that go by the wayside because we changed it just yesterday.
So I dropped the affirmative duty.
Yeah, I guess so. I still feel like they have an affirmative duty, but maybe it didn't. Okay. So, yesterday we decided to go with this automatic and so that it's non-threatening. And it's what they'll do is send a letter, which are often not responded to, but they will send a letter 6 months before the change or before the reevaluation asking for documents just to show. And of course, going forward, at each divorce setting where there is a child involved, they will know that this is going to happen. And so they'll get this letter, they'll have 6 months to work out how much more they're going to be paying for child support.
Thank you. We may actually have more questions than we have time, unfortunately. We have a final motion, which we're not quite ready for. I'm hoping that we have a motion on your bill itself. And just so you know, we have three options for motions on bills that we hear. First is to support in concept, the second is to oppose, and the third is to request additional information. Typically, when we have a bill that doesn't have a number
you need more information.
That's where we sort of head, but I'm going to leave that to the will of the commission. There's someone who'd like to make a motion on this bill before us. Commissioner Chavez-Howe.
Thank you. Yes, I will make a motion that we request additional information on this particular proposal, but we do thank you for coming to us, and as I mentioned to the previous representative, please look to us as
as support and counsel, and you know, it also gives us ideas for future research. That's what we often do during the interim, as we look for ideas of what do we need to be able to feed discussion like this in this area of policy. So maybe that's the direction we'll start to go, is maybe we have a research subcommittee. And so we are often looking for ideas for what do we need more information about in order to guide policy. So this led to some really interesting conversation here today. So we thank you for writing the legislation, and I'll make that motion.
Thank you. And you've given me ideas for research, so thank you.
Great. And when you have your final bill, we can send it out to the committee, and we can take an electronic vote also.
Okay.
This will be our last time to meet during the legislative session. Any other discussion to that motion? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to assume that was your summation. Thank you. And we'll, I think Representative Shaw would have his waiting summation. We will go right to our vote then. All in favor of giving this bill on
affirmative duty child support,
requesting additional information recommendation, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. So we'd love to hear from you on this as it moves forward.
And watch for it to change name.
Any final motion?
If I might just make just a recommendation. So Representative Edwards and I both have legislation we want for the consideration of the commission, as well as Senator Escamilla. But since we are commission members, I want to say we'll send that out electronically, and we can do an electronic vote since we're commission members. We didn't want to afford our other colleagues the time with you today as priority. So we'll be sending those. I'm going to hand out my fact sheet though, so that you have that.
Perfect. All right. Let's see, Commissioner Wallace.
I just remember we haven't approved the minutes.
Thank you. So do you have a motion on the minutes?
A motion to approve the minutes.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your noticing that. Those are our minutes of our last meeting, January 17th. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor of approving our minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. And now our final motion. Commissioner Breguet. Yes, we do. Okay. Motion to adjourn, not debatable. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. We are adjourned. It actually is non-debatable.
It really is.
Yeah.